A Man Alone by Andrew Rissick. Harriet, with Ronald Pickup as Philip Tremaine.
Hello, how are you? Are you all right? I'm not. I'm drunk. Men get drunk, you know. I don't feel well either. I may have got flu or something. Not sure. Cheers, anyway. Your health. Your very good health. I'm not an alcoholic. I can control it, you see. I tell my doctor that. He says, watch it. I don't know what he thinks. He's too bloody healthy for his own good. That's what's wrong with him. Jennifer wouldn't have put up with this. She'd have thrown the bottles out of the window and torn a strip off me. That was our marriage all over, really. Booze being flung from the windows. Home truths all the time. She was a marvellous woman. I loved her very much. I'm not being insincere or wise after the event. She meant a great deal to me. It's easy to lose that day to day. You should say such things often, all the time. It's very important. It's where most of us go wrong. The doctor's given me up. He thinks I'm a hopeless case. I can see it in his eyes. He looks like a haddock.
Are you sleeping any better?
No.
I think we might usefully try something a little stronger. How are you otherwise?
Terrible.
What sort of terrible?
Oh, miserable, dejected, apathetic. I'd rather be dead, really.
Those people you feel you betrayed, does that still prey on your mind?
Yes.
Your friend Anthony, that other girl, Laura?
Jennifer, too.
And that's what you still feel?
Yes.
It's the workings of a moral conscience. We all have people like that. It's a question of accepting it. That's where the real bravery lies.
I don't know.
You look a bit off colour.
Oh, I've got some bug. I'll have a scotch. Go to bed.
Well, make sure it's not pneumonia.
I'll be all right.
I'm giving you some more of these. They're a bit stronger. Only take them when you need them. Time is a great healer, Mr. Tremaine. This is common unhappiness. Your wife was very familiar with it. You must try to think of the future. I know that's easy to say, but that's what you must try to do. You'll manage. People go through worse.
I thought of saying, no, they bloody well don't, but instead I paid my bill and left. I'll spend tomorrow in bed. The temperature's up a bit. Booze should bring it down with luck. Cheers. Three months ago, things were fine. Well, not fine, exactly. No, that's overstating, but tolerable. Jennifer and I were screaming at each other, but we'd done that for years. Perfectly healthy compromise with happiness. I was at the BBC producing some play by one of those terribly good young bearded writers who pop up now and then. Everyone on that production had beards, I seem to remember, except me and the leading lady, who was a minor rock star and a pain in the arse, to be perfectly frank. The whole thing took place at night, and we filmed it near Paddington Station. I got in one morning at 8:10 and crashed out on a couple of chairs in my office. I was woken up by a knock at the door. I opened my eyes, and there in the doorway was a terribly nervous young man. I think he expected me to shout at him.
Huh? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, Christ alive, who are you?
Alan Foster. I've joined the department today. Terribly new, I'm afraid. A personnel told me I was working for you.
Do you know who I am?
I think so. Your name's on the door.
Philip Tremaine.
I hope that's all right.
Oh, well. Hello, then. Yeah, I'm sorry about all this. Draw the blinds. My mob's been on a night shoot. Some incredibly expensive piece of tomfoolery that all takes place at night. Plunk yourself down.
Oh, God, what time is it?
9:27. Mine's a digital.
Good God. Day's ready and waiting, isn't it? In fact, no one worth talking of in this sodding industry gets near an office till 10:30, so I'm bloody well up with the lark by most standards. Should be at home, sleeping it off. But I have a wife who doesn't understand me. So, you're our new script associate, is that right?
That's right.
Goody, terrific. You look very young and nervous.
Well, I...
No, it's entirely understandable. Barge into a darkened office, discover some dissipated, half-dressed old sod lying on the floor. I'd be nervous too, who wouldn't? There's some scotch, second drawer on the left. That's the Johnny. Great. You?
I'm afraid I don't. Only lager, I'm afraid.
Oh, quite right. It'll kill me in the end. Or so my doctor gleefully assures me. Now then, I hear you're startlingly bright. I gather we're going to be knocked for six by your general acumen and ability.
I probably ought to deny that, shouldn't I?
No, no, most emphatically not. First rule here, never apologise for anything. Never look a compliment in the mouth. May want to check you in the gutter in 6 months' time. Oh, Lord, I feel terrible. Look, you see that vast pile of filthy-looking paper on my tray? Those are my unsolicited scripts. Count them next door, read them in your own good time, and then think up some startlingly bright things to say about them, which won't be easy because I bet they're crap.
Right.
And don't feel intimidated. Trust your own judgment. I mean, that's why you're here.
Right.
Don't hurry it. Take your time. No one's breathing down your neck.
Right.
Join me at 12 and we'll go for a drink. By which time I should be functioning normally, or just about. Cheers.
Cheers.
I hadn't been home since Saturday and was dead on my feet. At home, I used to turn on the stereo and soak myself in Wagner. This maddened Jennifer. She used to scream, "For God's sake, turn it down, you egotistical man. Why should we all have our eardrums assaulted?" I'd yell back, "Listen, you infuriating woman, it needs to be loud. Loudness is the point. Who ever heard of a quiet Götterdämmerung, for God's sake?" She'd come in and turn it off, then. I'd go berserk. "Don't touch those controls," I'd say. "If you touch those controls, I'll kill you." She'd switch it off at the mains, and I'd threaten her then. She used to cry sometimes. Either I'd hold her and kiss her, or I'd walk straight out. When I got back, she'd apologise. "I'm not well," she'd say. "I don't know what I'm doing." "Yes, you bloody well do," I'd say, and go to bed. I found her sobbing in the kitchen at 4. "Look, are you all right?"
"Yes, I'm fine, I'm fine."
"No, you're not."
"Oh, for God's sake, Philip, I'll be fine."
"I know you think I'm an oaf. You think I don't give a damn, but I do, you know. It's awfully difficult. You won't talk. You don't think it's worth saying anything to me. You'll natter for hours and hours to doctors and what have you, but not to your husband."
"There's nothing to say."
"Of course there's something to say."
"I can't explain this."
"Well, I'm not asking you to."
"I know it's selfish."
"It's not selfish at all."
"I never should have married you, Philip. It's my fault, I know. I was never going to be very happy. All I've done is wreck your life as well."
"That's not true."
"Couldn't be more true. Couldn't be more obvious."
"No, I've never regretted any of this."
"But you must have."
"No."
"Well, it's an awfully nice thing to say."
"I mean it."
"I'm going to have a couple of my pills, then I'll try and sleep for a bit. You look exhausted."
"Oh, I'm all right."
"Have you got a lot on?"
"A fair bit, yes."
"Oh, go back to bed. Honestly, do. I'll be up shortly.
Did you promise?
Yes, Philip.
I met Jennifer in 1962. That's a long time ago. I was living on an island in the Aegean. One evening, she just got off the boat. I remember her standing there with luggage, in white slacks and a shirt, her foot tucked up behind her. I looked at her and thought, don't you be so bloody stupid. Don't you even say one word to that nice-looking woman. Leave her alone. She's not doing anyone any harm. We made love that night in our little villa.
3 weeks ago, I promised myself there were going to be no more men, even if it killed me.
I'm glad you changed your mind.
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I wouldn't have had the guts.
I've lived like a monk these last few years. I don't know how I found the courage.
God, it's hot.
You'll get used to that. There are people here who say it's paradise.
I know what they mean. You look up through that window and you can see the whole of the sky. The stars. It's incredible.
It's nice.
Oh, I'm happy, Philip. I'm terribly, terribly happy.
I'm happy too.
Only hours ago, I was at Heathrow watching the rain pour down. I was actually thinking of killing myself. You know, the way people sometimes do. You're carrying luggage, paying for tickets, buying books. But your mind's numb. You can't get over how unhappy you are. And it's selfish. You lose your friends. When I first went away to school, I cried all the first week, whenever I could, in a room where they stored the jam. Oh, God, how I loathed and detested being little. On the plane, I felt physically sick. That man's Freddy. That shallow, lying, superficial bastard. As we landed, I thought, well, I'll give this 2 days. I suppose it can't get any worse. Then as we drove along, I thought, oh, how I want him back. If only he'd take me back. I'd do anything to see him again. Anything at all. I've no pride. It's too difficult. And now, thank God it's finished. I shall never think about him again like that. Fred is finished. You're not like him at all. You're kind. You may not think you are, but you are. In the sweetest way with people. Look. I'm so sorry. Why don't you usually do this?
It's fine. Everything's all right.
Oh, God, Philip. What on earth would we have done if we hadn't met each other?
If we hadn't met each other, we might have led happy, healthy lives, as someone I knew once put it. Not that there haven't been compensations. Jennifer's intelligence has always helped me. She never said stupid things. Even so, her way of reading all night used to infuriate me. That Saturday she'd been up till 7 reading something. I was in a filthy temper. I'd made some lunch. I went up to tell her so.
Are you coming down? Because I've done some salad and there's a little cold beef.
Oh.
Are you coming down or not?
I'll think about it.
No, don't think about it either. Come down or don't, but make up your mind.
Don't start, Philip. I'm rather tired.
You've been up all night reading.
I couldn't sleep.
That's probably why you're so damn tired.
Can you get me one of my pills?
Well, I'll need some sort of description. What are we after this time? Is it blue or pink or green or yellow?
or red, or orange, or sort of off-white, or capsule
They're on shapes, the table, so. Philip, in front of your nose.
Oh, these.
Yes, those.
Heavens. I haven't seen one of these before. What do these do exactly?
Give it to me, please.
Better?
They're not cyanide, you know. They don't act instantly.
What a pity.
What did you say?
I said it's a pity they don't act instantly.
You're a banal man, aren't you, Philip? If only you were redeemed by talent, but you're not.
What crime have I committed exactly? I mean, what have I done to you?
What are you talking about?
You know damn well what I'm talking about.
No, I don't think I do.
In that case, I'll bloody well tell you so there's no bloody doubt in future. I've spent years trailing around after you, year after year after year. We've been the length and breadth of England. We've tried psychiatrists, doctors, hospitals, faith healers, quacks, even a bloody medium for God's sake. So what's the matter with you? No one knows. Well, I think I know. I think I can tell you. You're a lunatic. You should be behind bars. You had some ridiculous idea about life. I was going to give you everything you ever needed. And when I married you, when you got what you wanted, I wasn't good enough for you. I wasn't up to scratch. I was worthless all of a sudden. Well, I am not worthless. I am a normal, average man, and I am very unhappy. And you are a normal, average woman, and you're unhappy. But instead of making the best of it, like I do, like I've done for nearly 18 years, for God's sake, you want to take it out on me. You want your revenge. The whole world's got to suffer because you're not happy. You're a monster. You're evil. And I've had enough. I never want to see you again. My life is a misery, and I'm living in hell.
Don't be melodramatic.
You think I'm exaggerating, do you?
I know it's difficult for you.
It's not difficult, it's bloody impossible.
You're not a very easy person yourself.
I'm a damn sight easier than you. Right. I'm going out. And don't expect to see me for a bit. Get your own meals for a change. I'm on strike. Find some other poor sod.
Have a nice time.
Oh, I will, don't worry. I will.
I really was pretty damned angry. But there were things I wanted to do in the house. I couldn't go back now. I spent the rest of Saturday with a friend. Spent Sunday filming, was woken on Monday morning by Alan. Around lunchtime, he came in with some sandwiches.
I brought you some food. It's not very nice, I'm afraid. You look rather white. Do you want an aspirin or something?
With a sore head, that's all.
Oh, I can never get the hang of these things. Yuck. I've been reading the script.
What script?
The thing you've been shooting. It's rather good.
Went through about 10 rewrites.
I've seen most of his stage plays. I don't like them very much.
I never bother to go.
People kept doing them at Cambridge. I think they liked the rhetoric. It was all pretty unbearable. He's much better on the screen.
Weren't you a don or something?
A junior research lecturer.
Good God.
It's the lowest form of academic life. I loathed it. I'm also very idle. I spent a lot of the time asleep.
Ian's under the impression you're incredibly industrious. You're much struck by that radio play, and so he tells me, by the extremely purposeful tone of your letter.
I did quite a lot of work on that. More than I did on the play.
Well, you can relax now. Just sit back and watch the rest of us cock everything up.
Did anyone come looking for me, by the way? This morning, I mean.
I was dead to the world. You expecting someone?
I know a girl called Harriet in Light Entertainment.
Oh, do you just...
She's a production assistant. And you were rather well at Cambridge. We shared a house. And she always wanted me to leave. She said I should work with real people.
I haven't found many of those here.
I told her to put her head round the door.
I'm sure she will.
And she did. At about 10 to 6 that evening. I was feeling much better by then.
Are you Philip Tremaine?
I seem to be.
You've got a friend of mine lurking in your office.
Really?
He's called Alan. Shall I come and fetch him?
Oh, I don't think he'll need to be fetched.
Alan?
Hello?
There's a strange woman in here inquiring after you.
Harriet! You look good.
I'm wearing my posh clothes. I've been to a meeting.
How are things?
Oh, everyone's mad. How have you been getting on?
He's been getting on rather well.
He's bright, you know.
So I'm discovering.
Hey, you are the Philip Tremaine who wrote that thing on Goethe years and years ago when I was tucked up in pram.
That's right.
My parents are still going on about him. They say if you ever meet the man who did that, tell him it was wonderful, and why don't they do more things like that?
Mm. Well, there's more cash around then.
Yeah, Mrs. Thatcher, don't tell me. So, what are you doing?
Oh, we're doing the new Colin Cavendish film.
Oh, wonderful. What's this one about, then? Drugs, dope peddling, glue sniffing, an inner London comp?
It's about the last days of the Habsburg Empire.
Well, then what are you lot doing at Paddington Station?
It's about a very drab, frustrated little man who hijacks the 6:23 to Slough.
What for?
He wants to prove he amounts to something.
Sounds like Hitler to me. I had a headmistress like Hitler.
I'll tell Colin that.
Well, we must dash. You don't need him any longer, do you?
Yeah, I don't think so.
He's helping me to fit my double glazing.
That's her idea of feminism.
People need to do things with their hands. You know, manual work.
Not at my age, they don't. Go on, pop it, two of you. I'll stay and do some work.
Oh, is that okay?
Of course it's okay. Go on. I'll see you tomorrow. Drop in again soon.
I will.
Right, you. I don't know what's happened to young people today. They seem so disgustingly happy. When I was young, we thought happy people were stupid. We liked to sit around being serious and miserable. Oh, I did some work, and then for the first time in 3 days, I went home. Jennifer had left a letter on the hall table. It was a long, rather touching apology. She was upstairs. How are you?
Oh, I'm not bad at all. Having to do everything for a few days was probably very good for me.
I'm sorry, though.
Oh, it was my fault. How's it been?
Been chaotic, really. I kept on Julian's sofa. Oh. Film's turning out okay.
You look pleased.
I've got this absurdly young graduate working with me. He looks about 15. He's happy. He's got a very weird girlfriend. He's fantastically polite, and he'll probably be running the place by the time he's 40. So I feel him age.
I've been doing some painting.
Oh. Any good?
Yes, I think it might be.
I've missed you, you know.
I've missed you.
Used to wear those slacks in Greece. It's incredible you can still get into them. I remember I used to find them bloody erotic.
Really?
Why don't we go out later? I'll book a table at Aldo's.
Okay. Philip, I thought I'd go down to Cornwall to stay with Barbara.
Oh, that woman's a witch.
I'm going tomorrow. You need some time off.
She should be on a broomstick.
She's my oldest friend, and I always find it relaxing.
Why can't you relax with me, for God's sake? Well, come on, why can't you?
I don't know.
These lunatic bohemians of yours are the sort of people who mutt you up in the first place. That fake artist, Freddy. Never understood your obsession for these people.
Philip, don't.
All right, I'm sorry. If it's what you want.
I just thought it'd be a good idea.
I took her to the station at the crack of dawn the following morning. Don't like being on my own. I started to work late, even when there was nothing to do. Anything to avoid that empty house. One evening, hours after most people had gone, I bumped into Harriet outside my office.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Alan zoomed off hours ago.
I haven't seen him for a day or two.
Have you been slaving away?
People keep ringing up. Everything's got to be done at once.
Good night, Philip.
Oh, good night, Ian.
I suppose it's how you get on, isn't it?
The higher you get, the more there seems to be. Yeah, there's a rather splendid story about Stalin. One evening, apparently, Moscow radio broadcast a Mozart concerto. Stalin rang up and asked if there was a record. In fact, there wasn't, but they didn't dare tell him that, so they had to get down and make one on the spot. Must say, there were times when it would be rather nice to be Stalin.
Wouldn't mind being the Director General.
Bet you wouldn't. First woman, just like Mrs. Thatcher? Oh,
no, not like Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh, I'm a great fan of our Maggie. Most effective Western leader since Nixon. When Watergate happened, apparently, the Kremlin couldn't believe it. Brezhnev rang up and asked him why he didn't just have him shot. Are you off home?
Yes.
Well, I can give you a lift if you like.
It's Camden Town.
Oh, that's no problem, but look, I'm pretty knackered, so I'm going to the club for a terribly quick 10-minute drink. Oh, absolutely no longer. So if you want to join me briefly, I'll take you back afterwards.
OK.
Yeah. Tubes are diabolical. We need Mussolini.
Good God. What time is it?
It's not all that late. Oh, it's 1:10.
Feels later than that.
You said you wanted to get to bed early.
When I said it, I didn't actually mean with you. I can't tell you what this has done for my morale. I honestly thought I was going round the bend. Living with Jennifer is the emotional equivalent of a very strenuous bullfight. I'm rather stunned, to be perfectly honest. I thought I was flabby and middle-aged and disgusting.
There's a lot more to it than that.
Is there? I wish I'd known. One should be told these things. Aren't you spoken for, then? A lovely old-fashioned term. A young Alan, I mean.
Off and on.
It's off at the moment, is it?
I'm having a think.
He's awfully nice.
I know.
Really bright.
I know.
He'll go a long way.
I know he will.
He could do a hell of a lot worse.
It's nice to be with someone relaxed.
He's nervous, is he? I could take you on a holiday. Somewhere like Venice. Or Leningrad, if we were being more ambitious. I could spend 2 weeks with you. Buying you clothes. Paying you extravagant compliments. Making a complete fool of myself. And then I could propose.
You've got a wife.
Oh, yes, I was forgetting.
She sounds a monster.
She's not a monster. She's just unhappy.
Why don't you divorce her?
No, I couldn't do that. She'd kill herself if I did that.
Do you want one?
I loathe that stuff.
Oh, go on, have a puff.
Last woman I knew who smoked in bed was called Laura Kennedy.
Some old flame. I knew there'd be one.
Never more than one.
Oh, sure.
She was alarmingly beautiful, alarmingly bright, too. She belonged to a friend of mine. I stole her. He got her back.
That has a nasty way of happening.
He killed her. No, I'm entirely serious. Yeah, she married him. Wasn't faithful. He lost his temper, shot her, shot himself. He was called Anthony Moore.
Known him since he was 8. He'd been with me at Harrow. He was mad.
He sounds it.
He wasn't happy either.
We're all unhappy, for God's sake. What's the fuss about? These people, the things they do. You should learn to make do.
Oh. Is that what you're going to do?
I'm going to run a bath. Will you be all right? Go into the kitchen and munch something.
I feel like some coffee.
I remember sitting in Harriet's kitchen, staring at my coffee, and feeling unwell all of a sudden. The more I thought about it, the worse I felt. When she came back in, I was crouched over the table.
Hey, you're not feeling too hot.
No.
What's up?
I'm not sure.
Are you going to be sick?
I'm not sure. Oh, God, what the hell am I doing here with you? Oh, I'm behaving abominably. I shouldn't be here, should I?
What's the matter, Philip?
I don't know.
Are you okay?
I've spent my whole life doing things like this. Oh, my!
Are you going to be all right? Do you want me to call someone?
No.
You mustn't say anything to Alan.
No, I won't.
You mustn't.
I won't.
Will you be all right?
Yeah, I think so.
Philip, I'm here to say goodbye. Is the house man tucked safely away on the private side?
Yes.
Leaving school. It's an historic moment.
I thought you'd come by.
The end of an era. Well, the head of house's room at last. You've always wanted that. All this athletic splendour. You'll be head of school too next term. Don't beat too many people, there's too much of that. In fact, you'll be the best in living memory. Everyone will idolise you, like I've always done.
Shut up.
You've been a brick these last years. I don't know what I'd have done without you. You can love a fellow, you know, without it being sinister.
I know.
It's not difficult for you. You don't have these idiotically strong feelings. I want to take Oxford by storm. But there are people there who fought a war, so it's not going to be easy.
You'll do it.
I hope so. I don't think there's anything much else I can do. I'm not a normal human being, unfortunately. Anyway, it's going to be your golden age here.
Rubbish.
It will be. You must write to me, you know that, don't you? Your letters are actually very funny. I must go. I've got to be up at 6. I'll see you. Soon.
Good night.
Good night, Philip.
Mr. Tomkin knew I was going to betray Anthony. He was my first headmaster. He called me into his study one morning. I was just 13.
Ah, Jermaine.
I was told you wanted to see me, sir.
Yes, I do. Sit down. Don't be alarmed. You're not here for a whacking. Your friend, Anthony Moore, is leaving at the end of this term. I fancy you'll miss him a fair bit. I'm glad you've been such friends. It's done you both good. Of course, all being well, you'll be with him at Harrow in a term or two. You like him, don't you?
Yes, sir.
I want you to be on your guard, Tremaine. You're a very personable chap. You have great charm. You don't find life very difficult. You can't get past me. But you can get past most people. Moore is very fond of you. More fond of you than you may know. And later on, when you're older, when life is more complicated than it is here, you'll probably find that you have no great difficulty in getting what you want. That's a responsibility. I want you to remember to be kind. It's very nearly the most important thing in the world. If you can do that, you'll be a good person. And if you can't, you won't. Treat other people as you would like to be treated yourself. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
I hope you do. You probably think I'm talking a lot of stuff and nonsense. But I'm not. Very good, then. Cut along now.
Yes, sir.
You've got to invest in the future. And, if I might just say one more thing, they haven't got half such a good deal as this government and Mr. McGregor that provides...
Philip, hi.
Morning, Alan.
Collins just called. He wants to see a print as soon as he can.
Oh,
fine.
Have you spoken to Harriet?
Not today. No.
Well, I gave her a lift home last night.
Thanks.
I'd been on the phone to Dennis and then Mike, Jerry. Be honest, I was pretty knackered. I was heading off to the club for a quick one, and there she was, walking the other way. So I said, look, I'll give you a lift home if you don't mind having a quick drink first, which she didn't.
Right.
So we went off. Her directions weren't all that good, so we got stuck in a one-way system, but we eventually arrived nearly in Eden. Oh, and she said, have you eaten? And I hadn't. So she said, well, come in, I'll make you something. Did something with eggs and mushrooms and things. Actually, it was just what I needed. Then we had some coffee and sat about a bit, talking about TV, drama, old business of film, video, all that. One way or another, I got home pretty late.
Ah.
So, pretty shattered this morning. Colin on his usual number, by the way?
I think so. I'll just get it.
Great.
Look, have you just been saying what I think you've just been saying?
I think so, yes. What do you think I've been saying?
Oh, Lord. I mean, oh, Christ.
I wondered for a bit whether to follow him. Then the phone rang. It was Jennifer. She'd be back from Cornwall at 5. I used this as an excuse to go home. Shortly before 5, the bell rang. It was Harriet, in tears as far as I could see. I couldn't throw her out. I'm expecting my wife, so I'm afraid I can't talk for long. Look, you're someone from the BBC, by the way. You've been delivering some tapes.
Do you know what you've done?
Oh, come on.
You've wrecked my life. You've screwed up everything.
I can't believe I've done that.
You have. He doesn't want anything more to do with me.
I don't think he means that.
Of course he means it. You said you wouldn't say anything.
I didn't.
You promised. Why the hell couldn't you just keep your mouth shut?
You know... the morality of you people these days never ceases to astonish me. What the hell do you think life is? You slept with me because you wanted to. You thought it was going to be fun. Now you're complaining because your boyfriend doesn't like you. God almighty.
You said you wouldn't tell him.
I didn't.
You did.
I didn't tell him. I tried to. He guessed. Look, that's my wife. You'll have to go.
You were quite right. It wasn't relaxing at all. It was absolute murder. Oh, hello.
This is Harriet. She's very, very sweet. Brought some tapes round for me. I was just letting her out.
Oh, don't let me interrupt you.
How are you, anyway?
Hmm? I'm okay.
Right. Well, Harriet, let's discuss those tapes.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Tremaine. You must wonder what this is all about. I very stupidly had an affair with your husband. It's all off now. But I thought you should know.
Would you rather I didn't ask you any questions?
Ask me anything you want.
Is it true?
No, of course it isn't.
I thought it probably wasn't. I'll go and unpack. Have you ever met Barbara's husband, that fellow Saul? Do you know, I think he's one of the stupidest men in England. He wears this huge Aran sweater. He's got a sort of a pirate's beard.
It was a one-night stand, for Christ's sake. I did it because I wanted to feel wanted. This is something you've not made me feel in ages. I've been faithful to you year after year after year for the whole of our bloody awful godforsaken marriage. I wanted to feel wanted by someone.
Philip, I did ask if you'd rather not be asked any questions.
Oh, God, Jennifer, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
No, it's all right.
No, it isn't. I'm a brute. Shouldn't be alive.
Look, I'll go and unpack, and then I think we should both have a stiff drink.
What about your pills?
Oh, well, I've stopped those. I don't think they were doing me any good at all.
We had a rather good evening. We hadn't talked like that in years. Jennifer had made some new sketches. They were very impressive. And 2 days later, I went out shopping, and when I got back, she was unconscious on the kitchen floor. I did the thing you're supposed to do. I tried to make her vomit. The ambulance came. They looked at her quite carefully and said she ought to be all right. Then they took her away. An hour or two later, I turned up at Alan's flat. This is abominably impertinent. You must loathe and detest me.
No, I don't.
Well, you ought to, the things I've done to you.
It's all been sorted out. We're back together. In fact, it may have done some good.
Oh, can't have done any good.
You look awful.
Jennifer's just tried to kill herself.
Jesus.
Well, they say she'll be fine. They would say that, wouldn't they? She wants to die. She does actually want to. When she succeeds, people are going to say I didn't do enough.
Look, would you like a drink?
I can't. I'm going straight on to the hospital.
Are you sure?
Yes. Look, you've been awfully kind. Huge relief to hear.
Oh, well, it's all right now.
You're very mature, considerate people. Our lot were much more stupid.
My father always says the opposite.
Fathers do. Well, anyway, I must go. Thanks so much for being in.
I waited at the hospital most of the night. Jennifer died at 7:10. They told me there was nothing I could have done. She'd stopped her pills. There'd been withdrawal symptoms. I went home and I think I slept for a bit. I had the coffin brought to the house and put in the living room. On the morning that we buried her, I went in and sat with her and I could smell the roses and all the other flowers. I prayed that she would have peace. I wanted to weep, but nothing happened. Then they sealed down the lid. I remember the smell, the strong smell, the roses and the varnish together, strong in my nostrils. About 2 months later, I bumped into Alan at the BBC. He looked very sleek. I was going in to see someone. He was coming out.
Goodness me, Philip.
Sneaking in to see Ian, hustling for work. Well, how are you? How are things?
Oh, pretty good. I'm getting married to Harriet.
Oh, that's wonderful news.
Oh, we're both pleased. How are you? You look a bit white.
Oh, got some bug that won't go.
Oh, well, take it easy. Let's have a drink or something after Christmas.
I'd like that.
I'm sorry about Jennifer. Ian told me. I've been meaning to write.
I expected it. I'm coping.
Well, take care. And let's be in touch.
Let's. He's a very kind boy. I'm sure he'll be happy. Christmas hasn't been too bad. A couple of people have dropped by. Oh, I wish I could shake off this flu. Think of Jennifer a lot. I can't say whether I have any sense of her continuing existence. I'd like to feel she's about me somewhere, present in the texture of things. She's gone like smoke. I've left a message on the doctor's answering machine. It says they'll call back. I'm lying here trying to sleep. Don't find it easy. The bedroom scares me. As it did when I was a child. I remember that very well.
I saw the night, Philip. Should have been out hours ago. Would you not sleep?
I'm scared of ghosts.
Ghosts? They're very friendly things. I think they guard us from danger more often than not.
I'm frightened.
Well, now, let's see what we can do about that. Hmm? When I was a very young man, I was fortunate enough to sit next to Sir Ernest Shackleton, the famous Antarctic explorer, at a dinner. He told me a story. On one of his expeditions, it seems he lost his ship and all his supplies in the dangerous pack ice. So he and two of his men resolved to walk the whole way across South Georgia without stopping to get help. So on and on they went for 36 hours. And the strangest thing was, so Shackleton said, that it seemed there were four of them walking together. And when Shackleton counted, there were only three. Well, he put it down to a trick played on his mind by exhaustion. But the other end, his two companions said they'd felt the same thing. He told me he thought it was divine providence. And he may have been right. Now, young fella, you must go to sleep. I'm rather weary myself. I leave the door ajar. Good night, Philip.
Good night, Papa.
It was near the end of his life that I met him. A year later, he went south again, and one morning, he just fell down dead. His heart had given out, and they buried him at a whaling station out there.
The boat bound outward for hell contains a cargo of souls to the number of 963. It's bright and warm as we put off. And we are a contented, talkative lot, laughing and pointing out the sights. But below decks the crew are surly and silent, and the captain will not give us the time of day. He's a thick-set, broad-built man, and he wraps his hands in a thick woolen sweater. For as we travel, it is certainly getting colder. The sun seems to give less heat, and at night the sky is extraordinarily clear and strange lights are visible, hanging just below the horizon. On the fifth day, out from port with a strong southern wind and ice forming in crystals on the uppermost canvas, We began to catch sight of green things in the water beneath us, racing with us below the surface and staring up at us with silent, empty eyes. After that, nothing we saw surprised us at all. On the evening of the ninth day, there was a fire running along the surface of the water, just 10 yards ahead of us, but always retreating, always moving like a shadow. Then the darkness was never truly distinguishable from the light, and it was in between weather with a thick drizzle. Not rain, not snow, falling perpetually, never letting up. And what with the confusion of night and day and the dank sleet that fell eternally from prow to rudder, we were cast upon the fortune of our instrument to discern our position and the exact location of the stars, hidden from us now by a mountain of cloud. On deck, the air crackled with electricity, and this was a fretful, uneasy time, and our spirits sank, and we said little to each other. On either side, the ice rose beside us, and we feared beyond reason that it would tear the hull and sink us all. Then sheer cold caused the canvas to drop from the spars, and we went forward until the ice was thick and firm in front of us, and we came groaning to a halt. Then we knew in a moment that we had come to the end of our journey, and none of us should ever return from this abominable place. We disembarked without speaking, and alone and very cold, I walked along the shore. Whether it was the lateness of the hour or the extreme cold, I cannot tell, but at dusk, as I walked, I fancied that Anthony walked ever beside me in a bottle-green corduroy jacket. And when I spoke to him, he confessed himself very bewildered that he was here at all. When I asked him what he meant, he turned and gave me to understand, without more words, that this was the region of the world which men called hell. I started at this, being very frightened, and at length Anthony turned to me without speaking, with a countenance so pitiful that instantly I implored the highest power of that place to take him out of it for the love of God before my soul should be entirely confounded. And straight, as fast as thought, he was taken from me. And I saw him no more. I stood for a time, knowing now that I was here alone, walking the nethermost shores of hell, revolving memories, desiring extinction, wishing to cease forever and know the dignity of oblivion. This is my nightmare. God have mercy upon me. Remember me.
In Harriet, Ronald Pickup was Philip Tremaine, Brenda Blethyn, Jennifer, Jane Leonard Harriet, and James McPherson Allen. Philip's father was played by Patrick Troughton, Mr. Tomkin by George Baker, Anthony by Benedict Taylor, and the young Philip by Barnaby Rhys-Jones. Richard Durden was the consultant. The play was written by Andrew Rissick and directed by Jeremy Mortimer.